I have a Rick Mastin poem to lead off with here that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'll be talking about during the sermon, but some things to do with some of the later events of the day. It's titled, "For Such a Brutal Primitive Sport, I Must Apologize." Probably see where that's going. He does kind of a gender thing here with it. It's a little bit dated in some ways, but I can cut him some slack on that one. I hope you can too. Ladies, I hate to admit it, but there are times when I feel I haven't completely resigned from the Neanderthal club. Old Og still needs a way to deal with pent-up aggression, explaining perhaps why the trip to the Super Bowl has become such a national obsession. But then, isn't it more humane and genteel to tame the beast vicariously? To sit harmlessly watching a field where padded paid professionals hit and flog each other? Isn't this better than taking it out on the spouse, the kids, your dog, or your mother? To say nothing of possibly reducing the risk of World War III. I put it to you, isn't football really the civilized thing to do? On that note, you heard it here. Patriots 35, Giants 20. Okay, now to the business at hand. Although I'm not done with Rick at all by any means, because it was two Sundays ago that he and I shared the pulpit at the UU Church in Carmel, California. We had ourselves a really good time, but we kind of did this tag team sermon where I would say a little bit about his life as a poet and troubadour minister, which would lead into him reading one of his poems, and he'd get up and do that, and then I'd kind of go back to the story again, and we kind of back and forth it that way. One such story I related, and it's in the book that we did about his ministry, was about a UU minister's retreat that Rick attended in the early 1970s, shortly after he was given ministerial standing in our UU association. As he recalled it, it was not the most welcoming of settings. The Unitarian Universalist ministry at that time, we're probably talking 72, 73, somewhere in there, had what was practically an all-male preserve, and it had a very pronounced intellectual bent to it. Now, there's nothing wrong with being intellectual. Hope there's nothing wrong with being male. And I'm a pretty head-oriented guy myself, but it's just there wasn't a whole lot of integration at that time, at least not as much as we, I think, have accomplished now between the head and the heart, about the read and the piece that the grade school kids did for us earlier about where the church of the heart and the mind. We've had to move a little ways in order to get to that point. Well, in this rarefied old boys' club of a minister's retreat then, about 30, 40 years ago, comes this red-headed, hippie-looking guy wearing beads with a sheaf of poems, mostly written from the heart, and a guitar, and calling himself a UU minister. And he never even graduated college, much less gone to seminary. As Rick recalls it, there was one woman minister present amongst all those guys, and he and she were clearly the outsiders. Well, he came home from this gathering and did what any good poet would do in trying to process a not-so-happy situation, which is to say, he wrote a poem about it. Rick recited, correctly as it turned out, that he was actually witnessing the passing of an old order. He saw a paradigm shift coming in our ministry and liberal religious movement before any of those present did. And the poem he wrote, which he read during our dialogue a couple weeks ago, is called Oratoris Rex. It is, shall we say, a bit harsh. Not long ago, these grand, gray-maned gargantuans ruled the theological plane. Oratoris Rex. The rest of us jumping up and down like toy poodles at the neck of great dames. But in the muck discourse following dinner last night, the dinosaur came to the end of his reign. There, mired.
Do this without. Can you hear me all right? Okay. There, mired in the tar pit of yesterday's thinking, unable to free themselves from too much Chardonnay, they bellowed in rage, thrashing about, sawing the charged air with their teeth. Bewildered, wounded, feeling betrayed, no longer influential enough to throw their weight around, they went down slowly, glaring directly into our eyes. Today, their reputation is all that remains, left like petrified footprints, to be measured and intellectualized by smaller, more maneuverable creatures, unable to fully comprehend the enormous size and majesty these giants once had. There's always something about a change for the better that is terribly sad. Well, like I said, it's pretty harsh stuff. And ironically enough, I decided to use this poem in the Troubadour Poet Book to introduce what is really the most upbeat and heartwarming chapter in the book, as Rick and I tell about the many endearing and loving relationships he was able to cultivate with Unitarian Universalist ministers as he came to know them during his 40-year Troubadour ministry. And I decided to use this poem to give some sense of the tone and the flavor of our movement and ministry some four decades ago, and to provide a perspective for some of the thoughts I want to share for a bit this morning. And I have to acknowledge, as I think Rick would too, that with the poetic license to which poets are, of course, entitled, Oratoris Rex offers an exaggerated, if not somewhat distorted view of UU ministers and ministry back once upon a time. But it's an exaggeration, as many exaggerations in the poetic sense are, it's an exaggeration used to make a point about how the landscape of Unitarian Universalism and liberal religion has changed over the years. And what we here need to learn from that change, as we continue to shape the congregation we want to be, both for ourselves, for those we wish and hope to bring into our community. Parenthetically, the type of congregation that we want to be, both for ourselves and to those to whom we reach out, something that should be much on our minds as another pledge drive season approaches. I'll have more to say on that in a couple of weeks. Well, a more measured and admittedly less poetic way of looking at the change in the tenor of our liberal religious movement was offered about 10 years ago in an essay by one of our Unitarian Universalist ministers as he approached retirement. His name is Rolf Gerhardt, G-E-R-H-A-R-D-T, Rolf Gerhardt. He's now retired, lives just outside of Rockland, Maine. He and I serve the same church in Rockland at very different stages in our ministry. It was the first church I ever served while I was still pretty much wet behind the ears. And it was Rolf's last before he retired and went into the mandolin and guitar making business, which is what he's doing full time now. I mentioned we have a guest speaker next Sunday. I'll be traveling up that way to see him and spend some time with the congregation in Rockland. Rolf is a longtime friend of Rick Manston's. He made the guitar that Rick used for much of his Troubadour days. He was a great source of information for me as I worked on the book, and I want to thank him personally for that next weekend. And he also, the essay to which I referred a little while ago, and to which I now turn, has the same title to it as this sermon, or that I use in this sermon, Seekers and Orphans. Rolf opens up on an autobiographical note, one that I very much could have written myself, perhaps a number of you as well. I'm a searcher, always have been. I came into this religion because it was a searching, adventuresome, risk-taking, growth-oriented religion. Walt Whitman sat into my soul in words I first heard in one of our churches. Afoot and lighthearted, I take to the open road. I absorb deeply Frost's Road Not Taken and Thoreau's Different Drummer. My personal paradigm, shared by so many UU ministers 40 years ago, was that liberal religion was meant to be an adventure. So the adventurous seeker, then, was the predominant metaphor, predominant archetype for a person coming into Unitarian Universalism at the time that Rolf and yours truly as well first came upon him. Well, Reverend Gerhardt's contention as he goes on, however, is that the seeker archetype has shifted to where it is now primarily a person looking for healing who has come in to our congregation. It's not that the seekers have all disappeared, but they are no longer, in Rolf's view anyway, ascended. And he has mixed feelings about that as he goes could be, quoting him again now, it could be that the new paradigm of healing is a healthy feminization, note he calls it a healthy feminization, of our ministry compared to my generation's macho attitude towards pain. The previous generation of male ministers often had their attitude encapsulized in the samurai movie, in which, during the battle, one character is slashed open from stem to stern, following which his companion shook the dying man and shouted, "Brace up, brace up." More compassion than that is needed, to be sure. But there's always a but. If compassion and healing are all our religion becomes, it will be sad to lose that rare and wonderful emphasis on religious adventure that is almost uniquely Unitarian Universalist. Well, these are rather interesting words, interesting observations. And they come from someone who, near the end of his ministerial career, found himself sort of between two paradigms, between two archetypes. And he sees a lot of merit, a lot of necessity in that newer one that he calls the compassion healing archetype. Compassion and healing, after all, are a very necessary part of any religion. Clear across the spectrum, we've heard some very beautiful examples, expressions of that this morning with what the choir has sung for us, both of their selections. Roth, though, is still more attached to the older paradigm that first got him through the door. He still wants to dance with the one who brought him to the party in the first place. I'm 10 years younger than this gentleman, and I can still identify in a pretty good way to where he finds himself. But I'm also aware of how I have moved between this seeker and orphan archetype, as he's calling them, during the 30 years that I have been in the Unitarian Universalist ministry, 20 of which have been spent right here. The emphasis upon healing and restoring brokenness that has characterized our movement in more recent years is, as I believe Rolf correctly observes, a corrective to an earlier point in our association's life where the idea of being the masters of our fate and the captains of our souls, as the poem Invictus has it, was taken at times to rather unrealistic lengths. And as such, I welcome this movement. And yet, at the same time, I also feel that it is largely the call of a religion of adventure and discovery that constitutes the most healing balm of all, if we can go in that direction. To make one more pass then at Rolf's essay, he gets his terms, Seekers and Orphans, from the work of a therapist and Native American storyteller named Terry Tafoya, who specializes in grief work, and I must admit, whose work I'm not very terribly familiar with. I'll go one more time with this essay. The orphan is energized by feelings of loss or pain, common feelings in our impersonal world. The orphan seeks out persons, groups, and structures that will help him or her feel safe again. The group and its sense of community become salvation for the orphan. The seeker does not feel pain so much as dissatisfaction. And, markedly different, the seeker uses feelings of restlessness and uneasiness as a motivation to explore and wander, to take risks, to seek out the new. The seeker is always looking for something better, ultimately for spiritual transformation. And he concludes, "This is vital information for our ministry as the orphan and the seeker come to our churches looking for different messages and structures." Well, I take the term hour of ministry as used in here, not just to refer to what I do as your called and settled minister and what my professional colleagues do with their congregations. Rather, I take our ministry to mean the one we all share together here in this congregation. Ministering to both the seeker and the orphan is a challenge and a calling for each and all of us. And I'd like to move our thoughts. thoughts in that direction for a few moments as I work towards a close here. The first thing to note is the obvious thing, but I'll point it out anyway. Archetypes and metaphors are very helpful in trying to get a fix and trying to size up a situation. They help us make sense out of something that might otherwise not be quite as understandable. A danger is, of course, in taking them too literally or too definitively. I'm saying it's hard to find an actual living, breathing human being who completely fits into a type. Personally speaking, and as already noted, I would say I primarily fit the seeker type. I often experience a kind of restlessness that sparks a journey, having me looking for new insights and new meanings. I like restlessness. It has a way of bringing me out of a funk, getting me back to where I feel I need to be. But I also know, and I doubt there's any human being who doesn't know this, I also know I've certainly had my orphan moments of bewilderment, loss, and pain. And at those moments, I have to say, I don't much care about the lure of the open road, or the journey of discovery, or any of those other things, exciting as they may be. All I want then, as the old song says, is someone to watch over me. So we all carry that mix of the seeker and the orphan within us, with one generally being more on the ascendant than the other, depending upon who we individually are. And wherever you find yourself on that scale, you can kind of think of it as a continuum, and you're there somewhere on that. The truth is, some days you're going to operate in seeker mode, and some days you're going to operate in orphan mode. That's true for each of you, true for me, true for all of you. Whether you've been a part of this congregation for the better part of your life, or even if you're here for the first time today. And seeker that I primarily am, I do know those men and women come into our community, there are those who come into our community, primarily seeking a place to put together the broken parts of their lives. And at that time, they need that more than they need Walt Whitman's call to take lighthearted to the open road. And I believe we need to be here for such persons at such points in their lives. I believe we can be a community of healing as well as one of adventure. For I would say that every orphan has something of the seeker in him or her. And I believe the calling of a liberal religious community like ours, one of the callings is to be with those persons, to help them, to be a place where they can find their seeker part, lift it up, give it a chance to flourish, give it a chance to grow. One does not pursue healing after all just for the sake of having a nice looking scar. Healing is pursued for the sake of coming to live as full and whole and transformed and adventurous a life as possible. So, seeker, orphan, however much we may be at any given time in our lives are also, I believe, bound up and held together in a greater web of life. And within that web, we all live, and move, and have our being. We are connected, even when we feel apart. And it is within that common connection that we also find our individual strength and experience our individual transformation. It is my hope that in this congregation, as we continue on the road we have traveled this far, that we can, just amongst ourselves here, be a representation, be an embodiment of the greater web of life that holds and enfolds us all. I believe that together we will continue to do so. These thoughts in mind, let's sing together our closing hymn. Number 34, the Y-Mix.